Good morning, good afternoon, or good evening, and welcome to Full of Hot
and Cold
Air. Are you thinking about retiring? Maybe you should. On today's episode, we're talking with Scott Good from Goodco Mechanical and Contractor Succession. Don't walk away from your business with nothing. Here we go.
Of Goodco Mechanical in State College, PA. A lot of our contractors have probably heard of him before. We brought him in to speak about his newest company, Contractor Succession. But he is going to be talking to us today about creating a succession plan for any contractors who are maybe thinking about selling the business or have retirement on the horizon.
Thanks for joining us, Scott.
Yeah. Great to be here. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Welcome. So, Scott, why don't you give us a quick rundown of your resume? What is it you do? How did you get to be in your position? And about all of your companies that you have.
Okay. I'll try to keep this brief. I grew up in Pittsburgh, so I'm a right? Pittsburgh yeah. guy. Went to Penn State University, got a degree in architectural engineering, and then went to Washington, D.C. to work for a huge mechanical contractor in D.C. And I was there for about 8 years and got an opportunity to open up an office for another large mechanical that was in Harrisburg. And they asked me if I'd come to State College and open their branch office there. And it was like, okay, I think I can make that happen. I know Penn State. My wife was from Penn State. We had met there. And so it was a great opportunity. We eventually thought we were going to retire there someday. So we got there about 30 years early.
Yeah.
So did that and went to another large mechanical contractor, mechanical electrical contractor in the State College. And then in 2008, I decided to go out on my own. And so me and my two dogs in my dining room started Goodco Mechanical at about the worst time you could start a company.
Right.
So my oldest son was getting ready to start his college career at Carnegie Mellon, which wasn't a cheap school. Yeah. And I left a very good paying job to start Goodco from scratch.
Well, it sounds like it's all worked out for you in the long run.
I'm very, very happy I did what I did. I waited a long time to do it because I wanted to make sure that I had really thought it through. And I'm a planner. But I had come up with a pretty good idea of what I wanted Goodco to look like. Mm-hmm. Because I had worked for some pretty successful large contractors and wasn't afraid of the size thing.
Sure.
I will tell you, it was a whole lot easier doing it with somebody else's money than my own. but so here we are 10 years later, Goodco Mechanical. We have about 60 employees working for us. We do commercial construction, plumbing, HVAC. We have a service division. We have a residential installation division, very little new residential construction, but mostly retrofit. And then we do a little bit of automatic temperature control wiring as well. So that's Goodco. And then last year in June, I purchased a company, Bovard Heating and Cooling in Altoona. I'd been trying to get into the Altoona market, which is about 45 minutes away from State College. And it's a very... good old boys network, if you will. Yeah. And I couldn't get in with the Goodco name. And so I said, well, let's try another route.
Yeah.
I had met Jim Bovard on a trip several years before. And I gave him a call and said, Jim, I'm interested in getting into Altoona. You're thinking about selling. He goes, your timing is impeccable.
Wow.
I just had my business appraised and I'm ready to talk. And so I met with him and his brother 2 weeks later. We talked about price on day one. I said, I don't know if that's the right price or not. Yeah, I need to look at it. And so I spent the next month or so looking at it. We came to terms. I did a due diligence period of a couple months. And then in June of last year,
I made
the purchase.
Okay. Very cool.
And And then one other item is that back in 2010, I'd started a lighting business.
Yes.
It's called Energy Stewards.
So you got a lot of balls in the air.
I got a few balls in the air. I drive my wife crazy with this. But actually, the lighting business has been around, like I said, since 2010, and we retrofit commercial buildings with LED lights.
Awesome.
Okay.
So, yeah.
So then after you decided, okay, I'm not busy enough. I have three companies. I want to do something else. And then that's where you came to Contractor Succession? Or how did you decide that you wanted to dip your toe into that water?
So the idea came from two things. The first one was my own succession and what I wanted to do at Goodco.
Mm-hmm.
I've told this story to some people in the past, but I got a phone call from my brother who was a couple years younger than me. And he called me and said, I think I might have pancreatic cancer. And I have one brother, and I lost my dad. He was 54 to Lou Gehrig's. And my first thought is that's horrible. I don't want my brother to go. My second thought is I don't have a real good track record in my family. I better start thinking about what I'm going to do. Fortunately, my brother had pancreatitis. He's fine and everything's good there. But it really got me thinking about, I don't have my own succession figured out if something happens to me. And so I hired a consultant. The guy's name was Marty Wolf, who was my partner in Contractor Succession. Mm-hmm. And I said, Marty, I need you to help me develop my own succession plan. I need leaders to be able to run this thing if something happens to me. And even if something doesn't happen to me, I would like leaders to help me run my business I can go do things structure. I want to do. And so Marty helped me with that. And in the past 3 years, we've developed a handful of people who now run the day-to-day operations of my business. So I've seen how that can work and how it can free me up to do all these other things that we're talking about.
Yeah.
The second thing was the Bovard purchase. And I realized that I really didn't have anybody to help me go through that process. Mm-hmm. Quite honestly, I got lucky. I found a guy. I made a phone call. He was ready to sell. We were able to work out. Yeah, boom, boom, boom. And so that is not the norm.
Right.
And I realized that in order to make that happen, all those things had to fall into place to make that easy. And so I said, I think I've got an idea for something because most people have no idea how to do this. Mm-hmm. One of the advantages I have is that I don't fix things. I'm not a mechanic. I'm not a plumber. I have absolutely no skills whatsoever when it comes to fixing things. So there's no risk in getting a phone call and me going out to try to fix it because that ain't going to happen. So my focus is on business, and that's what I've always done, and I manage businesses. And so I said I can take my expertise in the construction industry, Marty's expertise in the coaching and executive, you know, coaching, and also in some of the things he's done with succession already, put those together and let's focus specifically on contractors. And initially out of the gate, let's focus on HVAC and plumbing contractors because that's what I know. Mm-hmm. So there you have it. That was the long way around an answer to your question.
Oh boy. Okay. I'm looking at my list here. You've knocked half of them out. It's okay. So is Contractor Succession, is that, I don't want to say like, did you discover this service or are you kind of unique in the market? Is this something that's like becoming a more commonplace as a business plan or are you one of one at this point?
Well, I'm not sure how many people are actually doing it with contractors. I know there's people out there. A friend of mine is a CPA who does it with car dealerships. He helps develop succession plans for car dealerships.
Okay.
And so there are people out there doing it for all kinds of different industries. I hadn't seen anybody specifically doing it in the contracting industry. And so that was why I said, there are some pluses and some minuses to it. Mm-hmm. The minuses are that most contractors don't necessarily think past how am I going to get that unit installed tomorrow.
Yep.
And that's not a knock. That's just the way we are as people because,
absolutely,
you know, most people that start contracting business, especially HVAC, come out of the field and their business, as successful as it might be, is still based on their ability to perform day to day. And so getting them to think outside the box in that, in order for me to move to the next stage or to, even if I want to stay involved in my business, to be less involved in having to go out and climb into attics, they have to change some things.
Mm-hmm. Do you find like a lot of resistance from guys who are, I don't want to say like short-sighted, but they're like you said, they're looking, you know, just the next day and the next day, and how am I going to get all of these jobs installed and forcing them to look a little bit farther down the road and say, okay, well, what's your 10-year plan? Are some guys really hesitant to that? Or do you think it's a case where they know they need to think about it, but they don't even know how to go about it?
I think that's more of it than the other.
They don't know where to start.
They don't even know where to start. And then when you start having the conversation, some get overwhelmed.
Oh, I'm sure.
Some get overwhelmed, which is a challenge for me. One of my favorite authors and speakers is Weldon Long. And Weldon has this phrase, and he always says, a confused customer says no.
Mm-hmm.
And so putting this in terms that become very simple and easy, because it's really not that hard. It's just a whole bunch of different processes mm-hmm. that you have to walk yourself through. My problem is I have verbal diarrhea and I want to bleh the whole thing.
Yeah.
On conversation number
right,
one.
Right.
So you have to like hold yourself back a little bit and be like, here's what I offer and we'll touch on all of this later. But
right.
Yeah. No, I can understand that. So, so what are some reasons that contractors would be seeking out your services? I mean, aside from the obvious of retirement, a guy's looking to maybe finally ride off into the sunset in a couple years, what other reasons would somebody seek you guys out?
Sure. Well, I mean, we set the business up initially to help with exit strategies mm-hmm. and succession plans. The more we got into this, we realized that we were actually building a kind of a business improvement and business development company as well. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, for me, ideally, I would prefer not to wait till somebody's 60, 65 years old to start having this conversation. Yeah. Because in most cases, they're very set in their ways and they don't want to invest time or money to make it where it's very saleable and where the transition is much easier. So, you know, a guy that's or a woman that's 65 or 70 years old that's still out there schlepping American Standard units in attics is going to have a difficult time making that transition to how do I get out of this? Because mm-hmm. they're living in the day to day.
It's very similar to people that maybe don't think about retirement, like from a financial perspective.
Exactly.
And then they're finally, they're like, okay, well I'm going to retire in 2 years. What do I do? And if you don't have a plan in place, you know, 30, 40 years before that, you're kind of, you might've missed the boat at that point. So like what age would you tell people like, okay, maybe start thinking about a succession plan if you're going to retire? Is it something like from day one or in your 30s, in your 40s?
Well, you know, I've read so many books on this, and most people, you know, they talk about start with the end in mind. So as you're starting your business, you should already know what it's going to look like and what your plan is eventually. That doesn't happen. Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't know that's realistic. I don't even know that I knew it when I started mine 10 years ago. I knew that I might have a couple kids that wanted to get in. I have one son who's starting with me next month.
Nice.
He just graduated Very from cool. college. But I didn't know if he was going to do that. So for me, it was, let's make it as good as we can make it. Mm-hmm. So when it's time,
There's something there.
And I think that's really what I try to stress with the people that I work with at Contractor Succession is, you may not know today exactly what that's going to be, but let's put it in a position where when it's time, it's worth a whole lot more than it is today.
Yeah.
Okay. So really it's never too early to start thinking about it. And probably never too late. I guess at some point, you know, I'm sure you get people that are like, hey, I want to retire next year. Help me.
We've had that.
Yeah.
I mean, we've had that. And it's very difficult to make sure. Something out of that, because they're thinking we're going to come in and all of a sudden drop this magic pill in there and their business is going to go from being worth, you know, $50,000 to $500,000.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
And that's not realistic. Most experts recommend 5 to 10 years before you're going to get out that you should start mapping out what that looks like.
Okay. So as far as whether you want to sell it or you're going to pass it off to a family member.
Right.
Or
and those are some of the conversations we have. You know, so we walk through with somebody. Ideally, what would you like to see? Mm-hmm. Would you like to see your employees own this? Is there anybody here that has any aptitude and desire to want to own the business?
Sure.
Let's talk to them. Mm-hmm. Do you have family that's interested? Do you have somebody, you know, that, or maybe not. Maybe they're just looking for somebody to come in off the street, pay them a bunch of cash, and then walk away.
Get the best price. Yeah.
and so until you sit down and actually have that conversation, and I'll tell you that most people haven't thought that through. So
yeah.
That's the initial conversation mm-hmm. is, mm-hmm. What would you like?
Mm-hmm. It almost seems like in a way, and I don't want to get like too morbid here, but people rarely ever like plan their own funerals because they're like, oh, it's so far off. I don't have, you know, it's somebody else will figure it out or it'll take care of itself. But then, you know, God forbid something happened. You don't want anybody to be like, well, what do we do now? You want to have that plan in place to make sure that things are going to go according to how you want and to your will, and just being able to look down the road and say, okay, it's obviously not something I want to think about, selling my business or retiring or whatever, but it's a conversation that needs to happen.
Yeah.
Well, and I think maybe to, like you said earlier, Scott, I think you used the word overwhelmed, but I mean, it's an emotional process, and there's some questions that you kind of ask yourself and about your business and your life that it can be pretty emotional, right? I'm sure you saw that with Jim on his side of things, well, kind of that letting go and coming to, you know, coming to grips, I guess, is maybe a better way to put, you know.
The initial part of it is an emotional thing, but then the walking away thing is even more emotional.
Sure.
And fortunately, in Jim's case, in month two, Jim said, "Hey, whenever you're ready, let me go. I'm fine. I can go."
He was ready to walk.
He was ready to, but that's not typical.
Sure.
Most people that put, you know, 30, 40 years into a business have trouble letting go. Even for me, because I guess when I started my kind of, if you will, succession, my transition, it was 7 years, and it was really hard, and it forced me to, you know, step back and let other people make decisions. I had a great example when I was working for a company called McClure Company out of Harrisburg. They were, at the time, they were probably, mostly they were all commercial.
Okay.
But they were probably $30, $40 million a year company. And Bill McClure was a really, he was kind of a control freak, but he had built a really solid business. And he had brought a consultant in, and the consultant said, "You're ruining your business because you can't let go." Hmm. And he had all these entrepreneurial people involved in it. And he, to his credit, and I'll tell you, I watched it, and it allowed me to have a different perspective when it was time for me to do it. He stepped back. His company went from 30 to 60 million over the next 5 years. And then he sold it to PP&L for a truckload of money.
Wow.
So just by getting out of his own way, kind of.
Exactly.
What's the quote? Like, there's claw marks on everything I've ever let go of. I imagine that's pretty true for like a business that somebody's been entrenched in for 40, 50 years. Yeah. They're like, I don't really want to turn this over yet. So.
Yeah, I mean, I can, I don't think it was necessarily the control thing, but I mean, I can reflect on my grandfather coming here for 3 days a week until literally days before he passed away. And I think it's that, connection, you know, that connection to, yeah, what you've seen kind of start from the ground.
I mean,
yeah, he literally saw it from the ground up. So it's, yeah, I think that's a really good point about the emotionalness as well.
I think too, like with so many, especially with contractors, it's very unique because so many of these guys just work such long days, long weeks. They're working Saturdays. I don't want to say that they don't have time for hobbies, but like they're just so entrenched in the day-to-day aspects of their business and of their work. And then suddenly like to think about, well, what am I going to do when I wake up on a Monday? Like I don't really golf. You have to think about that as well. Yeah. I'm sure thinking about, well, what am I going to do to fill my time so that you don't have that sense of loss when you finally do sell it or, you know, retire or do whatever. It's, do you ever have to like coach people on that? Like, okay, well, if you're going to retire, what does your retirement look like?
Well, that is part of the process.
Okay. Yeah.
Part of the process is, what are you going to do after?
Mm-hmm.
You know, now some people say, I'd like to remain on for 5 years, or I'd like to hang around for, that's fine. If that's what you want to do, it's your decision. There are people that say, I want to get out. Okay. So what's next?
Yeah.
You know, because you can't just go from, you know, 100 to zero and not think there's going to be any impact on your family, on your health. It's kind of a morbid thing too, but in some of the books I've read, and they talk about making sure that when you're consulting with people on this, you go through that process. A lot of people off themselves at the end of it because they realize that they were the big dog, and now nobody cares what they have to say anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And depression sets in, and there's people that really go over the
cheese.
I can understand that from just like, you know, a micro perspective. But when I was on maternity leave earlier this year, obviously I was busy all day, but just not having that sense of work and of contribution, it was kind of like you lose a sense of identity in a way. Like you feel like you're not contributing to something, and you really have to find a way to fill your time. So I imagine that's probably a really important part of contractor succession, is just making sure that these guys aren't going to be, you know, sitting around watching The Price is Right until noon. Like, are you going to golf? Are you going to hunt? Are you going to travel? Yeah. Like, what's your plan from a personal aspect?
Do something with that profit.
Yeah, exactly. Right? Yeah. If you're selling it, go, you know, buy a boat or do something fun.
And I guess let's maybe use that as a transition to, maybe talk about, what does that process that you walk the contractors through look like, Scott? Do you guys start with that conversation about what the end looks like for them, or does it start with that business analysis kind of?
So the initial thing, let me just kind of walk you through our process.
Mm-hmm.
So the first thing we do is we have a 1 hour phone consultation with the customer, and we have a 8 or 10 different questions with some sub questions that really allow us to determine, can we help them?
Okay.
So it's things like, you know, what kind of sales do you have? What does your staff look like? Do you have family involved? What is your business model? What's mm-hmm. your marketing look like? What? So we go through a whole bunch of different questions so we can determine. And at the same time we're asking those questions, we're getting a lot of questions asked to us too. How would you handle that? And so at the end of that 1 hour, we're able to determine either yes or no, because there are certain times it just doesn't make sense. Mm-hmm. It's not, I can't help you, mm-hmm. you know? And that's not because you're a bad person. I just can't help you.
Yeah.
You and some of them may not want help, mm-hmm. you know, because it's going to require them to make some changes. And in some cases they have to, you know, do completely different stuff sure. than what they were doing, because, you know, they'll tell me, you know, I'll say, so what's your business look like? Well, our sales have been going down. Our profits are going down. We really didn't make anything last year. And so do you want to keep doing that, or what do you want to do? Because mm-hmm. we can help fix that, but you're going to, you know, you can't do it the same way you're
doing
it. You
don't snap your fingers exactly. and it changes, right? Yeah.
So after that 1 hour conversation, we kind of agree whether we're going to work together after okay. that. And then we, the next step is we come to the customer's place of business okay. and spend a day or two. And really dig in.
Okay.
So we're going to look at financials. We're going to look at their contracts. We're going to look at their accounting software. Mm-hmm. We're going to look at if they're doing service, their dispatch software, how they keep track of everything. I want to talk to their management and leadership team, other family members to figure out, you know, what are they doing well. So it's almost like a SWOT analysis: mm-hmm. strengths, weak opportunities, threats. And so we'll look at that, and then as a result of that 1 or 2 days, depending on how big or how, you know, complicated the business is, we'll generate a report that basically tells them, here's what you're good at, here's what you're not good at, here's what we think you should do. And then we'll give them an action plan in order to put them on a path Very cool. to doing what they should be doing. All right. At that point in time, they can walk away from contractor succession. So that first piece, the cost to do, for us to come and do mm-hmm. that is anywhere from about $3,500 to $5,000, depending on whether we're there a day or 2 days mm-hmm. or whether, you know, we're traveling a long way or, you know, just sure. how much we think we're going to have into it. And we'll tell them that before mm-hmm. we do that. And so at that point, after they get that report, we call it the State of the Union assessment.
Okay.
Once they get that State of the Union assessment, they can just say, okay, thank you, and go try to do it themselves. Mm-hmm. And there are some that might be able to do that. My guess is most can't. Because if they could have, they probably would have been
right,
doing it already.
Right. And it comes back to that overwhelming. You see that, I'm sure you see it in the list, and it's like, oh man, that's a big action plan.
Yeah.
And I'm
exactly.
one guy.
Well, and we'll prioritize it. So we'll say, okay, the biggest bang cool. for the buck is, let's just for argument's sake say it's, you need to get a handle on your maintenance agreements.
Okay.
You need to have more recurring revenue, and it needs to be tracked, and we need to figure out right. how, because as a buyer, because I treat this as if I'm a buyer.
Okay.
Because I was a buyer. Mm-hmm. And heck, I may buy it if I like it. So I want to make it look more appealing to a buyer.
Right.
So that's one of the things that's going to be really important. So that may be the first thing. The second thing might be you need to have a better either a website or some sort of digital marketing footprint.
Right.
You know, or whatever those things are. And we'll sure. outline them for them and say, here's where we think we can help you improve that. So again, we give them several outs. So if at that point in time they think, I can't handle this anymore, these guys blew my brains out, I'll take their report and we're done.
Okay.
Or we can engage further and they can hire us to work with them over a period of anywhere from 1 to 5 years to help them go through that action
whatever
plan,
their plan
and identify
like.
How we can do that. And so the other part of what we want to accomplish is doing kind of a return on investment analysis for them, because obviously we're not doing this for free. And there's got to be a way that we can show them, okay, if we can help you do these things, here's what you're going to pay us, but here's how your business will improve in the short term in terms of improved income. Mm-hmm. And here's what we think based on because we're going to give them a valuation as well with that State of the Union assessment. So let's just say we say their business is worth $250,000. We're going to show them over the next 3 years, if we can work together, we can help you. If we do these things and we agree we're going to do these things, we can take your business from being $250,000 to $750,000.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Okay. Because I want to show value in what we're doing. I don't want just people to trust me. I got to say, here's what we're going to do right. for you. Here's the things. And we think that by doing these things, we're going to be able to improve the value.
Justify the value.
Yeah.
Okay. So making sure that, yeah, that their investment is in you is measurable and that they have a realistic expectation of at the end of the road, this is why I've paid contractor succession to do the things we've done.
Exactly. Because ultimately what I want is for a bunch of people to improve their business, sell them, make a lot of money, and say, you should have seen what Scott and Marty did for me.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep.
I mean, that's my goal.
I think you have a really unique perspective, too, because you've seen it from both sides. I mean, you obviously have a dozen businesses at this point, and you've also bought a business, so you know, I'm sure you know how hard it can be owning a business and having that be your baby, and then someone wants to come in and say, okay, well, this is what you should be doing. But on the other hand, you know, as a buyer, this is what's appealing to me about your business, and this is why I'm going to pay you more for it as opposed to, you know, paying less.
Right.
So I want to touch, you had mentioned about getting people involved digitally, and that's obviously a topic that we keep hashing out over and over and over. Would you say that that's one of the biggest obstacles that some of the contractors you work with face? Like maybe they haven't gone digital yet, or they're just solely relying on word of mouth to keep their business afloat. Like what would be the biggest obstacle that you see?
Yeah. So if you're a two trucker or three trucker, and you've been able to survive that way for a long time just on referrals and word of mouth.
Which a lot have.
Great. That's fantastic. Keep doing that if that's what you want to do for the rest of your life. The issue is that as a buyer, I don't want to buy that because ultimately you're walking out the door. And all those friendships you've made over the years just went out when you walked out the door. So there has to be something there that I'm going to buy besides just your goodwill.
Right.
And so one of the things is being able to have a marketing plan in place that is generating new business, nurturing the business that you have. And it is a challenge because most people have been able to survive, not most, a lot have been able to survive without that. It doesn't work that way anymore. And I'll tell you that as a buyer, trying to determine what my next batch of customers looks like, they're digital.
Mm-hmm.
You know, millennials are, they don't,
they're here
and they're going to be spending a lot of money in the next 10 years. I'm not thinking about next year. I'm thinking about 10 years from now when I'm looking at buying your business.
Sure.
And so I'm trying. So when I'm meeting with my clients, the goal is let's talk about what this thing looks like 5 and 10 years from now. Cause it's fine today. I love what you've done with the curtains, you know, but the curtains are old and they need to come down because you got new tenants coming in and they want blinds or they want something different. So, so having some level of, being able to get the Google reviews, having a website where people can go and find out something about you, having landing pages where people can find out something about Mitsubishi or something about. And so one of the things that Contractor Succession has is we have a team that we've assembled behind Marty and myself that help us with things that maybe we don't know. I mean, I think I'm a decent marketing person, but I'm not creative at all. So I have a team that works for me, a company called Impressions in State College, which we've brought to the table for Contractor Succession to help people on a much smaller scale than what Good Code. I have a lot invested right now in marketing and advertising, but I realize that's not what everybody does. And so, you know, they will work to help people get that digital footprint and be out there. So people, when they're Googling HVAC near me, that it shows
you're
up,
showing up
that you're somewhere near the top.
Yeah, that's, you couldn't have wrapped that up better because that's, I mean, that was one of the last episodes we did. We keep talking about how important it is. And, you know, I feel like a lot of times we're just like beating these guys, like you have to be online, you have to be on Google. And it's really just a matter of future-proofing your business because what worked for you 20 years ago with word of mouth might still work for you until you retire, but it's nobody's going to buy your business for the human capital if the human capital is the one walking out the door. So,
exactly.
And especially as a buyer, you know, when those customers leave, you know, those word of mouth customers go, you know, if you're trying to get into that market or you're already in that market, you're going to be fighting for those customers anyways when they leave that guy. So to that point about there being really not a lot there to buy. Yeah, because you were probably maybe had an opportunity to have those customers come calling you anyways when that guy goes out of business.
Right.
So I think it just points to a little bit of that devaluing of the almost, you know, I think it's a testament to the industry. So many of these, you know, so many contractors have built their businesses on this. And I think it's a little bit of kind of the fundamental shift in the industry. And I think you're the perfect person to kind of speak to the future of that, Scott, because I think you're doing one of the better jobs of seeing the other side of it and yeah. seeing kind of where this industry's headed at the contractor level. You know, I think it's maybe I'm so excited because I feel like there's a little bit of validation, because I think, as you know, we're trying to kind of beat it in, like Mary Beth said, and it's cool to see someone, you know, really seeing it and trying to educate the contractors, you know, from that contractor perspective as yeah. well.
Well, I got to tell you, if you can't tell, I'm pretty passionate about this.
Absolutely, yeah.
I get passionate about a lot of stuff, but you know, I kind of look at this as it's an opportunity for me to give back to an industry that's been good to me.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And I realize that I am a little bit different than most, because I didn't come up through the trade and do all that stuff. But man, I got a soft spot in my heart for people who have, and mm-hmm. they work really hard, and it breaks my heart to see somebody spend 20, 30, 40 years building something and then have to walk away and just liquidate, you know, sell yeah. their trucks, sell yeah. their tools and walk away with nothing.
Yeah.
And if I could just walk up to some of these and just shake them and say, yeah. come on, let me help you.
Yep.
You know, I get it. It costs money, and but ultimately, There's, you know, I look at this legacy thing and somebody to leave a legacy.
Sure.
You know, and not just sell the
Let
trucks.
It go. Yeah.
You know, just,
yeah.
I think it's sad.
Absolutely.
I think it's
that's,
sad.
That's
and,
a really
and,
good
I, and so for me, that's why I'm really persistent about it too. So, you know, I'll have conversations with folks and they're like, yeah, I want to do this. I don't let it die, because I realize how critical it is, because it's almost like, you know, knowing that ultimately I'm going to get some debilitating disease that's going to kill me, and I refuse to buy life insurance to take care of my family.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, it's, I almost yeah. like, don't be selfish. Think about what this is going sure. to be for you and your family down the road.
Yeah.
You know?
Absolutely.
So,
How many out of like all the, you know, the people that come to you at Contractor Succession, what percentage would you say are people that maybe aren't thinking about retiring, but they're kind of like, I just don't know that this is for me anymore. Maybe they just want to sell. They're just, you know, not of retirement age, but they're like, okay, I want to switch gears. I want to pivot and do something else. Do you guys get a lot of that?
Most of what we've been seeing so far has been people mid-50s and older,
okay,
baby boomers. And we really did kind of focus our marketing and our attention on baby boomers, because I realized that's the biggest segment right now mm-hmm. in our industry.
That's huge. Yeah.
And they're retiring quicker. You know, and the other part is a lot of these companies have employees that are that age too, mm-hmm. that are starting to retire. And we're having trouble. I think an advantage that I have over anybody else, you know, some investment banker who wants to help contractors figure this out, is that I'm living this every day. I can't find people. I've been yeah. trying to hire a service manager for 4-5 months. Yeah. I've interviewed 8 people and haven't hired anybody mm-hmm. yet. So I'm living the same thing sure. that these guys are living. And, you know, and so, you know, some of the stuff that I'm having conversations with some of my clients are the same things I just did this morning.
Right.
You know? Yeah. So you can feel their pain in a lot of ways.
I do. I feel their pain. And, you know, oftentimes it makes me feel like, you know, am I overselling myself because I'm trying to help them with something I'm fighting with too? But I think it gives me a little credibility.
Yeah, I think it validates and makes you a lot more relatable, I think, too, you know, because, and I don't think, you know, I think anyone listening, and I think Mary Beth and everyone that's met you would agree, there's not, you know, you're very humble about your skills and your experience. And I don't think there's a lot of, you know, I'm smarter than you. I think you touched on it. Give them back, you know, you're just trying to help is really kind of the perspective you take on it, which I think really shows and shines in all of the contractor succession pieces
yeah.
and kind of the method and reason you guys go about things.
So. Yeah. I mean, I'm sure it's very helpful that you're not coming in there as like, you know, some arrogant accountant saying, okay, these are 10 steps you need to follow. Yeah. And if you don't do it, you're never going to yeah. sell your business. You have to really be able to relate to these guys and, like you said, feel their pain and know the pain points in the industry.
Well, I think having my partner Marty has been in the executive coaching mm-hmm. and just team coaching for so long. Mm-hmm. He's seen so much more outside of the contracting business, because a lot of what we're dealing with has nothing to do with contracting.
Sure, sure.
And so having him help with, you know, with leadership development and other things like that we can bring to the table. The other thing that you know, you mentioned about an accountant coming in, and the one thing that is a challenge as a business owner is hearing that your business isn't worth what you think it's worth.
Oh, I'm sure.
And
it's
most
like someone telling you your baby's ugly. Exactly. Like, what do you mean?
What do you mean it's not worth $5 million? You only did $1 million in sales last year. That ain't worth $5 million. But, you know, I think as a general rule, and in most of the reading I've done about succession, regardless of in what industry, people overvalue what their business is worth.
Yeah. Right. And I think it comes a little bit back to that emotional connection to it.
Yeah.
And you feel that those blood, sweat, and tears day in and day out and all of that pain. And it's like, it's got to be worth $5 million, right?
I've got $5
million
worth
of pain here. Yeah. So,
so you mentioned, that a lot of the contractors you work with, they have staff that are probably also looking at retiring soon. So how do you handle a situation where, you know, you're working with a contractor and you say, okay, if you've been doing, you know, pen and paper books and a ledger all this time, you need to move to an accounting system and you need to start tracking this stuff. But if everybody's kind of looking, you know, in the short term, like, hey, I want to get out of this, is it an uphill battle to teach an old dog new tricks, I guess, for lack of a better phrase, like to say, okay, well, you have to start doing it this way.
Sure. Well, I think there's a couple answers to that. The first one would be is that once I figure out what their goal is, I can deal with those things a little easier. So if I know that they have a 5-year window and their interest is in trying to keep as many of the employees there, but that maybe there's nobody there that could run the business. So maybe we go out and we try to find a strategic person that can come in, manage it ultimately with the intention of buying it.
Okay.
Gotcha.
And so, you know, there's all kinds of ways we can look at that. But again, you know, even going back to the conversation about marketing, it's not about how you're doing it today. It's about how it needs to be done tomorrow for the guy or gal that's going to buy it. And so, yes, sometimes those hard conversations are, we really need to get off of pen and paper. Let's at least try QuickBooks. Can we try QuickBooks?
Yeah.
You know, and can we do something besides just handing out, you know, little sticky pad notes as to who's going where today for as a dispatcher, you know?
So it can be, I mean, I think that's, you know, a good point for the contractors listening out there. You know, there's, it can be even the little thing, you know, some of those things can be the smallest changes to your business, but they can mean huge things.
Yeah, and quite honestly, as a consultant, you pick your fights.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, yeah, I can look at a business and say, that's wrong, that's wrong, that's wrong, that's wrong, that's wrong. You know what? Somebody can come into my business and do the same darn thing, I'm sure. So you try to be selective about the things you want to bring up and talk about, and they should be stuff that will bring immediate value.
Yeah.
So if I'm going to pick a fight with somebody over something, I'm going to do it over something that I think is going to bring value, you know, and then I'll stand. And if they say no, it's their business. They can do whatever they want to. But they're paying me to tell them how to improve their income and how to improve the sale value of that business.
Okay. So from a general standpoint, if someone does have retirement on the horizon, we'll say, you know, 5 years away, what would you say, like, what would be, you know, your top three things? Like, okay, make sure you have this, this, and this. Like, out of, and I'm speaking in generalities here because, you know, every business is different, obviously. But just, yeah, from a whole perspective, like, what would you say is the most important?
Okay, I would say probably the first thing, and again, it depends on whether you're going to sell to an outside entity or whether your plan is to try to do it with either to family or employees. Let's say it's family employees. My first thing would be to focus on raising up your management staff to be able to run the business when you leave. Oftentimes it just gets handed to a kid or it gets handed to a nephew or the next, you know, your service manager. They have absolutely no business skills, no leadership skills. So that's probably pretty important to be able to, if the plan is to transition it.
So priming somebody to take their place.
And developing that person to be able to run the business when you leave. That would be number one. Second thing would be making sure there's systems in place. Systems to be able to, you know, track the recurring revenue. Systems to make sure that there's follow-up with the service department. Systems, just making sure that there is repeatable systems in place that allow somebody else to run it when you leave and or, you know, your wife who is the bookkeeper leaves and now so you're starting from scratch. So putting things in that can be recreated. And I would think maybe the third thing is maintenance agreements. That to me is that recurring revenue thing comes up more times.
Attractive as a buyer?
Yeah, big time.
Okay.
Big time. So
awesome. I think those are really great points. And I think there are things that, you know, again, they might sound overwhelming if you start to really pick away at them, but I think they're also simple enough that, you know, a contractor can go out and start focusing on maintenance agreements today. You know, I mean, you can kind of flip that switch with a relative, it's more of a mindset than anything else, I guess.
Yeah.
So I think that those are really good points.
One of the things, we've been talking a little bit about this, the value of the business, and I like to have this conversation, and sometimes it gets a little confusing, so I'll try to keep it as simple as I can. We talk about income, and the income is how much you're bringing in annually. So, you know, you do $1 million in business, you net out 100,000 at the end of the year. 100,000 was your, they call it EBITDA, interest, taxes, depreciation, amortization, all that stuff. So the goal is, let's make that 100,000 a year be 200,000 a year. So how do you do that? You either increase your sales and keep it at your same margins, or you, you know, you, something, in most cases, you're going to still need to increase the sales to some level, but you come up with efficiencies that make you more profitable. So let's get that 100 to 200, right? So that's the income side. The value side is in what the business buyer is looking for. And that's things like the management team in place, a smooth accounting system that works, the recurring revenue piece. All those, sometimes I call them intangibles, but they're the things that add. So oftentimes when a buyer is looking at picking up a business, they take cash flow or EBITDA times a multiplier. Okay. And those multipliers in our industry can be anywhere from one to maybe up to five, maybe even higher if they're if a business is really, really good. So our goal is to get those intangible pieces solid so that that multiplier goes from a two to a three or a four.
Right.
Because if they're going to take that, so if we can get the 100 to 200,000, right? And the multiplier was two, now your business is worth 400,000.
Right. Yeah.
So if we can get the 100 to two and now make the multiplier a four, now it's worth 800,000. Okay. And sometimes people get confused with those numbers, but I think it's important to realize we got to get the, we got to get the income right, but that's only half of it.
Right.
That's all, that only fixes it for today.
Sure.
It's the other intangible pieces that add value to the business for a buyer who's going to come in and say, yeah, I'll give you a multiplier of three or four or five if it's that good.
Sure.
So.
So you bring up an interesting point because I think people that maybe don't have a ton of financial sense, they think, okay, well, if I'm trying to get the most bang for my buck in terms of the business, I just need to sell more, and you can't really sell yourself out of a hole, and sales aren't always going to fix the problem. So you really have to look, dig a little bit deeper into the accounting and the financials and figure out, okay, well, what else can I do to...
Well, the income will solve the short-term problems.
Yeah. Sure.
I mean, it'll take care of those problems all day long. But that may or may not be anything that a buyer wants.
Right.
Yeah.
Depends on your end goal.
Exactly.
So do you have like a, is there a success story of someone that you've worked with? Maybe like a, like give us an abridged case study of someone that you guys have helped that, you know, you you can sell your services and hang your hat on.
Not yet.
Not yet. Oh, everybody's selling the product. Yeah, I guess it's a pretty new business.
Yeah. So, I mean, other than me buying one myself and working on my own, I mean, we're not to the point where we're going to be able to have any anything where anybody sold their business yet. So,
yeah. Okay. But you're everybody's in.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you have a, few success stories in the making then.
That's the plan. I mean, I think we're we're moving in the right direction, and I think there's I'm starting to see a lot more interest in how this works. I think for a lot of folks, this is a whole new concept.
Sure, absolutely.
It's a completely different thing, and it's not. It doesn't help them today. You know, some of the things that you guys do with them helps. You know, a rebate from Mitsubishi helps them sell a project today. They want to know all about those rebates or financing. That helps them today. This doesn't help them today. This is a long-term thinking thing.
Right, and I think, you know, to your earlier point about, you know, really realizing that there's nothing like this going on. I think it. The only maybe times that these guys think about it is through, you know, one of the business development classes through a vendor or manufacturer and the GROW and the ACT group. And it's it might be like a 4-hour class on selling your business, but that's not, you know, I think we've shown over the past hour here that it's much deeper than that. It's much more of a convincing, you know, not convincing yourself, but preparing yourself for that mindset and really realizing your goals and having that vision to say, okay, where am I going to be in 5 years, 10 years? And, yeah. and what do I want for this?
Yeah. You know, it's a timing thing too. Sometimes you mm-hmm. make that phone call or you make that connection and somebody's really honked off about something that happened today and said, yeah, let's talk.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah. I've seen that with hiring employees. Mm-hmm. You know, you mm-hmm. just happen to time it when their current employer really pissed them off,
right.
you know, and they're game to hear anything.
Yeah.
You know, I've hired lots of employees that way, right. just from the time. Well, you know, even buying Jim Bovard's business, mm-hmm. it was a timing thing. He had just had it looked at and he was ready. And I called him. Somebody else could have beat me to the punch.
Sure. Yeah.
So
element of luck there.
There is some.
Sure.
So I'm going to make you take your own medicine here. Have you thought about your own succession or the you have all these businesses right now. Are you even thinking down the line? Are you still pretty much entrenched in
it? Well, yes, I am. You know, I've got a couple employees that I've been working with on some things. My son, Jordan, starts, like I said, next month. Mm-hmm. He graduated from Shippensburg in business management, and he's been working for me on and off summers and Christmas holidays for the last 6 or 7 years. And so my older two didn't want anything to do with my business, which was fine. They had other interests, but Jordan starts. So I'm sure he'll be involved in that at some level. I'm in no rush.
Yeah.
I want it to be as successful as it can be. So when I decide when's the right time for me to move on, it's worth something for Christine and myself, my wife. Right. So and then I'll have other interests too.
And I think you touched on it a little, Scott. It also, even just going through some of the process, it sounds like it freed up obviously yourself, but even your organization a little bit to be a little bit more efficient and kind of that examination of succession actually helped you in the short term.
Oh, huge. And I can't stress that enough. So even people that aren't thinking about getting out, because really when I started my own succession at Goodco and, you know, some of the transition, mm-hmm. I was 15 years away from even thinking about that. I just wanted some of my time back and mm-hmm. I was tired of making all the decisions. And so, you know, I make very few decisions anymore. You know, in fact, when I start making decisions, some of my guys will say, can you get out of this? You know, so, okay, cool.
Awesome.
It's yours. I don't want it anymore.
Yeah. That's cool. And that's got to, I'm sure with so many called irons in the fire that, yeah, that's got to be, I guess, somewhat rewarding for you to kind of see it almost running itself a little bit and then be able to devote time to other passions sure. and things of that nature.
That's like, you know, we just heard that earlier this week. Someone said the best thing you can do for yourself and for your business is to hire good people, you know, just
yeah,
make
absolutely.
Sure. And then you're not, you know, putting out 1,000 fires a day. You can take a step back and admire the handiwork of others.
I hear that from a lot of people say, I can't afford to hire that person. I go, okay, but you realize what that means.
Yep.
You're stuck doing it all the time, forever and ever and ever. Amen.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so until you take that first step to find your replacement and start giving them some autonomy, and mm-hmm. you're always going to be, you know, your ability to earn is based on your ability to get up every morning and go out and run pipe and put ductwork in and set units and.
Oh, yeah. I'm sure that's hard, too, because, yeah, like so many guys are like, I can't afford to do it. And it's that conversation. Well, can you afford not to hire somebody else to do it? And it's, again, looking longer term. And, okay, it might hurt you for a couple months, you know, when you're paying this person's salary. But if it's going to allow you to grow and get more from your business, then ultimately you've gotten that return on investment.
I had a very successful contractor about 10 years. He and I had a conversation about that. And I said, or I guess it was maybe 8 years because I was a couple years into it and I was looking at hiring a project manager. I was looking at hiring mm-hmm. all these things, someone to do nothing but sales. Oh my God, you're going to hire someone to do nothing but sales? How's that going to help you? You know? I said, how do you do that? And he said, every time you're ready to take that next growth step, you have to step out on faith because mm-hmm. you're going to invest that money and you're not going to see the return on that for a little while.
Right. Mm-hmm.
But you have to know that if you don't do it, you're never going to you're never going to grow. And so, you know, I learned that and sometimes I'm a little wild with that and I you know, get a little too risky. But in general, I think that's pretty sage advice that, you know, in order to grow, you can't keep doing it the way you're doing it because you're maxed out. So you're going to have to take that next step. So what is that step? I don't know. Ask somebody who's done it before and they'll help you.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. We certainly see that here at Comfort Supply as, you know, as we continue to grow and then it always seems like we'll reach a pain point. It's like, okay, everybody has a capacity. Have to finally just, you know, you don't know what you don't know. Yeah. You just have to have somebody else do it for you.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. Well, we can wrap up today by, why don't you give your elevator pitch for anybody listening? Yeah. Why do they want to Why do they want to hire you?
Well, as I said before, I'm really passionate about doing this. I want to help contractors succeed. I want to help them leave a legacy, and mm-hmm. and whether that's to your kids, to your employees, selling so you and your family can live well on what you worked for. For me, the biggest tragedy is that if you spend 30 years or 40 years of your life and don't have anything to show for it, I like being able to work and help other people succeed. It brings me great joy. It's why I started Goodco. I wanted to create a place in my business for people to have opportunities and succeed. I feel like we're all put on this planet for more than just ourselves. Mm-hmm. And so this is just my opportunity to do that.
Great. So if someone's if someone's thinking about getting out of the business, how do they go about getting in touch with you guys?
Yeah. So our website is contractorsuccession.com. And actually on there's a pre-qualification page where you can go in and fill out some information. We call it our right fit survey. Okay. And it's a couple general questions that get sent. It comes to me. I'll look at it, get back to you, and we can all begin that conversation. We also have a toll-free number. It was kind of cool. My wife got this one. 833-4U2-EXIT.
Nice.
Very cool. Very cool.
That was crazy. Yeah. We were down in South Carolina driving from Hilton Head to Charleston, and I said, Christine, I forgot to do this. Get this phone number. And she says, they have some vanity ones. I go, like, what? And she said, I don't know. And she came up with 4U2-EXIT.
I need seven. Yeah, it has to be seven characters long and stuff.
So 833-4U2-EXIT. Now, cool. If you ask me what those numbers are, I have no idea.
Still look at your phone.
Still look at your phone and figure that out.
Okay. Well, great. Yeah, any final thoughts?
No, I just want to thank Scott for coming in, spending some time with us. I know you're in transit past us, but thanks for stopping by, making some time, and it's always a pleasure talking to you, sir.
It was great. I really enjoyed this. Thank you.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Thanks again for listening to this week's episode of Full of Hot and Cold Air. Do you have a question, or would you like to be featured on a future episode? Get in touch with us. You can follow us on Facebook and Twitter at FOHAPod. You can also email us at fohapod@csipgh.com. Remember, that's FOHAPod. Until next time.